Today is Thursday, May 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The World Health Organization cautions the use of a malaria drug to treat COVID-19.
At this stage, hydroxychloroquine, norchloroquine have been as yet found to be effective.
Plus, Germany looks to bail out its flagship airline.
Lufthansa is in a very delicate position.
And a look at the complex relationship among the U.S., China, and Taiwan. We'll have those stories and more next. Leaders of the G7 nations are considering U.S. President Donald Trump's idea of meeting for an in-person summit perhaps next month, while the world continues to deal with the coronavirus outbreak. Japan's government spokesman said that Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's attendance is still under consideration, but that the two countries have been in close contact. Japan's economy minister said on Thursday that experts have approved a government plan to lift a state of emergency in Osaka and two other prefectures while keeping in place orders for Tokyo for at least another week. The World Health Organization said on Wednesday a record 106,000 new coronavirus cases were identified globally. That's the highest daily number since the outbreak began. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said in a news briefing that almost two-thirds of the new cases were confirmed in just four countries. He did not mention them by name, but several news reports named the four countries as the United States, Russia, Brazil, and India. At the same briefing, Mike Ryan, the WHO's head of emergencies programs, cautioned that the touted effects of a malaria drug against COVID-19 have not been sustained.
Every sovereign nation, particularly those with effective regulatory authorities, is in a position to advise its own citizens regarding the use of any drug. However, the hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine are already licensed products with indications for many diseases. I would point out, however, that at this stage, hydroxychloroquine, norchloroquine have been as yet found to be effective in the treatment of COVID-19 or in the prophylaxis against coming down with the disease. In fact, the opposite in that warnings have been issued by many authorities regarding the potential side effects of the drug.
The Johns Hopkins University COVID-19 tracker currently has over 5 million confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus globally. A quarter of Americans have little or no interest in taking a coronavirus vaccine, according to a new Reuters Ipsos poll that was published on Thursday. The poll found that some people are voicing concern that the record pace at which vaccine candidates are being developed could compromise safety. While health experts say a vaccine to prevent infection is needed to return life to normal, the survey points to a potential trust issue for the Trump administration already under fire for its often contradictory safety guidance during the pandemic. Some 36% of respondents said they would be less willing to take a vaccine if U.S. President Donald Trump said it was safe. Most said they would be heavily influenced by guidance from the Food and Drug Administration or results of large-scale scientific studies showing that the vaccine was safe. Asian markets closed mostly lower Thursday as investors reacted to bad economic news from Japan and to China's worsening trade and diplomatic relations with Australia and the United States. European exchanges were down about 1%, and U.S. markets were marginally higher in early trading Thursday. German Chancellor Angela Merkel warned Wednesday that countries should not prioritize renationalizing international supply chains and said that rich countries should help those less fortunate. The statement comes as the airline Lufthansa is in advanced talks over a $9.9 billion state bailout that would see Germany take a 20% stake in its flagship carrier. As countries battle to save an aviation industry hammered by the coronavirus pandemic. Now for more on the deal, I spoke earlier with journalist Nicolas Pinault in Paris via WhatsApp.
Lufthansa is in a very delicate position because of the crisis because of the pandemic. You know, his fleet has been grounded for the past few months. As of right now, that's what the chief executive officer, Captain Spohr, said last May, that the company has about $5 billion in cash remaining. And basically right now, what they're doing is that they're grounded almost 300 planes for this year, and it should be the case until 2021. So everything has slowed down, like all the aircraft, like the oil companies. And basically, you know, it's the major European companies, but it took pretty heavily because of what's going on with the pandemic. And, you know, because of this decision from the German government, and it's still pending, it has to be approved by shareholders and by the EU Commission. But, you know, it's a big improvement, and it will save them pretty big on during this crisis.
Now, Nico, on Wednesday, German Chancellor Angela Merkel made a comment warning against renationalizing international supply chains. Can you elaborate on those remarks?
Yeah, so the exact quote is that the answer to the pandemic can certainly not be to renationalize all international supply chains now that everyone will pay a very high price. So basically what she's explaining is that, you know, we had this huge debate in Europe, and maybe you had the same in the United States, that how come we cannot, you know, produce masks, protective equipment within the national or maybe the European space, and we have to delocalize everything and import everything from China. And now that we have the crisis, obviously, we want to make sure that we produce on our own ground those products. But what she's saying right now is that it might be true for the mask, maybe, or for protective equipment, but maybe not for the whole economy. Because basically what she's explaining, that's the rule of the capitalism, is that it might be cheaper sometimes to produce those products abroad to, you know, to make some savings and to be able to focus on where you have some leverage. And for the Germans, it will be the auto industry, for example. But on the other side, she was talking, you know, cooperation between the countries. And it refers to the deal that was announced with the French president, Emmanuel Macron, when they basically announced a $600 billion fund to be able to raise money on the markets, kind of coronavirus bond, on behalf of the states, to be able to help some states within the 27 blocks, to like Spain or Italy, to be able to receive those funds. What she did this week when she announced the plan, when Angela Merkel announced the plan with Emmanuel Macron, it was a huge step forward in more integration within the European bloc to be able to mutualize the debt. And that's what she was referring to also when she made her comments yesterday.
Nicolas Pinault is a reporter based out of Paris, France. African Americans have been hit hard by the pandemic's economic fallout. The unemployment rate for Black Americans is nearly 17% compared to 14.5% for white individuals. Tapping into federal financial aid help hasn't been easy either for these Americans who have fewer economic resources than others. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports.
Terrence Can hasn't worked at his Oakland barbershop since mid-March, when California's shelter-in-place order went into effect. He hasn't applied for federal help as his income dried up.
Actually, I called the bank, but they said that they were not accepting any more applications. You know what I'm saying? So you don't really know exactly which way to go, being a small business, because it's not much information out there available to you.
Can is fortunate. He has a little savings, and his wife works at a grocery store. But the fact that Can hasn't tapped into any federal help is common among African Americans, say observers. Black people in the U.S. have been among the hardest hit economically in the crisis. Unemployment is higher for Black Americans than white ones. Many Black business owners do not have relationships with banks or the financial cushion needed to weather hard times, they say.
Thank God I had a little savings. You know, other than that, my savings is dwindling, but, you know, who can I really complain to?
Derek Johnson, owner of the Home of Chicken and Waffles restaurant in Oakland, was able to get some federal assistance, but he worries about his employees.
A large number of individuals in the communities in which I employ from, like I said, don't have internet, don't have access to internet. So how do they apply for unemployment? How do they even know about any of these, you know, programs that are going on?
Beyond financial help, Tapping into networks that can help Black business owners get back into business is also a struggle, says Carolyn Johnson, executive director of the East Oakland Black Cultural Zone.
Again, it goes back to network. A lot of businesses, if you have the right relationships and you can call someone and say, can you make sure when you get a truck of gloves or whatever, you hook me up? That helps. But again, if we're not networked and in those circles and people don't think, by giving your friend who's a business owner that box, who are you forgetting?
Restaurant owner Johnson says he helped his employees apply for unemployment, and he and other Black business owners call each other and give advice.
It's the time to not really panic, relax, take a deep breath, and call all of your creditors, call all of your whoever you have to pay bills with, and let them know, look, I can't do it.
For Can, the barber, it is touch and go.
You know, thank God that I am able to sustain for a little while, but, you know, I just don't know how long, but we'll see how it goes. You know, I just keep praying. I keep, you know, just try to keep a positive attitude.
Michelle Quinn, VOA News, Oakland, California.
And coming up later.
A deadly cyclone pounded eastern India and Bangladesh on Wednesday. It killed at least 14 people and destroyed thousands of homes.
This is VOA News.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. The United States, like countries around the world, has shut down large parts of its economy to contain the threat posed by the coronavirus pandemic. On this edition of the program, I speak with two experts who talk about the delicate balancing act between reviving the moribund economy and preventing the spread of COVID-19. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The U.S. government has notified Congress of a possible sale of advanced torpedoes to Taiwan worth around $180 million. The proposal further sours already tense ties between Washington and Beijing, which claims Taiwan as Chinese territory. In Beijing, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian urged the United States to stop all arms sales to and military ties with Taiwan to prevent further damage to Sino-U.S. relations. The U.S. announcement came on the same day Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen was sworn in for her second term in office, saying she strongly rejects China's sovereignty claims. The Beijing government responded that reunification was inevitable and that it would never tolerate Taiwan's independence. Now, to examine the increasingly complex relationship between China, Taiwan, and the United States, as well as the world, I spoke with Curtis S. Chin, former U.S. ambassador to the Asian Development Bank and Asia Fellow with the Milken Institute, a nonpartisan policy research institute.
When we think about the timing of what is going on with Taiwan and the rest of the world, clearly COVID-19 has provided an opportunity for not just Taiwan to increase its engagement with the world, but it's also provided an opportunity for the rest of the world that has really probably long wanted to better engage with Taiwan, to have the chance to do so. So, you know, I was struck by Beijing's response to the approvals. It was really run-of-the-mill. It wasn't more over-the-top than usual. And we need to keep in mind that when way back when under President Jimmy Carter, the U.S. switched recognition of the government of China, really from Taipei to Beijing, it was done with the understanding, with the approval from the U.S. Congress, that the U.S. would provide for Taiwan's defense in the Taiwan Defense Act. And so really this is just continuing that. That's par for the course. The other thing that we need to keep in mind is that Tsai Ing-wen, the president of Taiwan, just was re-inaugurated for her second term. And her speech, if people haven't heard, they really should read. I mean, she made very clear that Taiwan rejects this one country, two systems system that Beijing has put in place with Hong Kong. And given all that is happening in Hong Kong, we can very much understand why that is Taiwan's position.
Well, you mentioned a few things there, but I guess what I want to follow up on is you mentioned the United States switching its recognition from Taiwan to China. In the last few years, a number of countries have also done that. So I guess the question is, Where do you see Taiwan's role internationally now?
Well, in some ways, Taiwan's role is strengthened by what has happened with this coronavirus. Beijing can be very vindictive. And so countries, companies, and others are really trying to think through how can they better engage with Taiwan to their own benefit, but also recognizing an increasingly aggressive and assertive Beijing may push back. So how does one work that balance? You know, it's really unfortunate for the world that Taiwan, in a way, has been so cut off because of Beijing's geopolitics, when indeed Taiwan can help. Taiwan is helping when we look at what they're doing in terms of trying to share their knowledge and trying to really contribute personal protective equipment and other materials to countries in need. You know, going back to Tsai Ing-wen's inauguration speech just yesterday, she spoke about four principles: peace, parity, democracy, and dialogue as principles that should guide that relationship between Beijing and Taipei. And very clearly, if both sides would take those principles into account, it'd be for the better of the region and of the world.
Curtis Chen is the Milken Institute Asia Fellow and former U.S. Ambassador to the Asian Development Bank. China is emphasizing trade cooperation with the Middle East and North Africa during the COVID-19 pandemic, but some observers think many recent initiatives have been more for show than substance. Edward Uranian reports that the economic cooperation between Middle East countries and China has increased significantly over the past two decades.
Egyptian media extensively reported on a recent shipment of healthcare and medical equipment from China, suggesting improving economic ties between the two countries remains a focus of the Egyptian government. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has made five trips to China since taking office in 2014, and Beijing was Egypt's second largest economic partner in 2019, with $10 billion in trade. President Sisi told a global gathering in Beijing last year that the relationship is important to Cairo. He says that he was anxious to visit China due to the importance Egypt gives to the Belt and Road Initiative, in addition to the joint interests and mutual threats that bind us together, along with the potential for stability and growth. A large part of China's trade with North Africa and Europe transits through the Egyptian-controlled Suez Canal, and China agreed to invest $18 billion in Egypt in 2018, including a joint trade zone along the canal, along with infrastructure projects in the energy, transport, and building sectors. Dr. Paul Sullivan, a professor at the U.S. National Defense University, tells VOA that China is not as dominant in trade with the region as many may think, but they sure would like to be, and their importance in trade with these countries has grown quite a bit since 2000. China is Egypt and Lebanon's largest source of imports, but most regional countries have a well-diversified source of imports and markets for exports, depending on what they're exporting, such as oil and gas, and what they're importing, such as transport vehicles, telecommunications equipment, etc. China's relations with the United Arab Emirates has also expanded dramatically in recent years, with Beijing becoming the UAE's largest trading partner in 2017, with $53 billion in trade. Projections of $80 billion in trade in 2020 will probably not materialize, though, due to the COVID-19 pandemic's damper on world trade. The port of Dubai is a key focal point of Chinese trade throughout the region. China has also stepped up health and medical aid to Iran in the wake of the COVID-19 crisis, which has hit Tehran hard. Nevertheless, trade relations between China and Iran are fairly insignificant compared to those with the UAE and Saudi Arabia. Similarly, agreements between China and Syria to help rebuild that country's war-damaged infrastructure have gained media attention but remain relatively insignificant in numerical terms. Chinese electrical engineering and construction firms have participated in recent Damascus trade fairs. Algeria has also been a major focus of Chinese trade in the Arab world, with Algiers importing close to $8 billion in goods and services from Beijing in 2018. Chinese Ambassador Yang Guanggo says that Algiers has agreed to be a major partner in the Belt and Road Initiative.
On est obligé de trouver un autre site pour construire un port.
He says that China and Algeria have decided to build a new shipping port in the Algerian city of Cherchell, and that the port's future capacity will be from 3 to 6 million freight containers per year, compared to the current 800,000 containers. China's Middle East trade representative, Zhu Haijian, insisted during a recent visit to Morocco that trade between the two countries had seen a large uptick, including Chinese imports of minerals and nearly 200,000 Chinese tourists visiting the country. Niu Xinchun, director of China's Institute of Middle Eastern Studies, told a recent Chatham House Research Group discussion that he thinks that China is a relative newcomer to the Middle East and that international media exaggerates its role in the region. U.S. media, he says, overstated China's capability and intentions. Nevertheless, increasing bilateral trade between China and most Middle Eastern countries is evident, despite temporary setbacks due to COVID-19. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Washington's peace envoy is visiting Kabul for the first time since Afghanistan's political leadership reached a power-sharing agreement. The visit comes amid an increase in violence blamed mostly on an Islamic State affiliate that has been targeted in stepped-up U.S. bombing. In a flurry of tweets early Thursday, Zalmay Khalilzad spoke of his meetings in Doha earlier in the week with Taliban representatives and his meetings Wednesday with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and fellow leader Abdullah Abdullah. All were aimed at resuscitating a U.S.-Taliban peace deal signed in February. A U.S. official says the Philippines has emerged as a global hotspot for online child sexual exploitation. A new study released by the International Justice Mission in Washington says Philippine cases have increased sharply in recent years, with parents cooperating to have their children victimized for money. U.S. State Department official John Richmond, who oversees U.S. efforts to combat human trafficking, says the global shutdown amid COVID-19 pandemic seems to be worsening the situation. In 90 cases involving 381 victims from 2011 to 2017, 43 victims were abused from 2 months to 4 years. The youngest victim was less than a year old. Iran state media reports the government dismissed new U.S. sanctions on several top Iranian officials, saying they were a sign of the complete inefficiency of Washington's previous sanctions on the Islamic Republic. The United States on Wednesday imposed sanctions on several Iranian authorities, including the Interior Minister, accusing them of engaging in serious human rights abuses. A deadly cyclone pounded eastern India and Bangladesh Wednesday, killing more than 80 people and destroying thousands of homes. Reuters' Gloria So has this update.
The capital city of India's West Bengal state, Calcutta, took the brunt of the storm as Cyclone Amphan tore down trees, smashed cars, and left residents wading through flooded streets. The massive storm barreled out of the Bay of Bengal with winds up to 115 miles per hour. Chief Minister Mamata Banerjee said that 500,000 people had been evacuated. And with rain continuing, she said the hardest hit areas were not immediately accessible. In neighboring Bangladesh, officials said at least 4 people were killed and power supplies have been cut off in some districts. Authorities there moved around 2.5 million people to storm shelters this week, including hundreds of Rohingya refugees from Myanmar. Rescue operations have also been complicated by efforts to avoid the spread of coronavirus. In West Bengal and neighboring eastern Indian state Odisha, authorities have struggled to house evacuees since shelters were being used as quarantine centers. And police said some people were unwilling to go to the shelters out of fear of contracting the virus.
Gloria So reports for Reuters News. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, tablet, or desktop computer, or any other device to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.